You care to begin?
Thank you, Wayne, for your kind introduction. And once again, welcome to all of you to the 1996 ISIL World Conference. 1996. We're just a few short years away from the dawn of a new millennia. We've seen some major changes in the last couple decades. Indeed, I believe that historians will look back at the next few years as a major turning point for the evolution of our civilization. Once upon a time, you could lock an entire continent behind a concrete wall and tell them only what you wanted them to hear. By keeping them out of touch with the rest of the world, you could convince a huge percentage of the world's population that wealth resulted from exploitation of the poor, or that individual freedom meant societal collapse. In other words, you could lie and get away with it. That time has passed. Communications technology has made suppression of truth much more difficult. First, there was Radio Free Europe, then television satellites, bringing the whole world the same programming. Telephones and fax machines can give us virtually instantaneous communication almost anywhere in the world at a nominal cost. And finally, the internet brings us the potential, not yet fully realized, of two-way communication with virtually every person in the whole world. What's the result of all this interaction? Lying is becoming much more difficult. The days of putting up a wall to keep a whole continent incommunicado with the rest of the world are over. If only one person tells the truth using modern communication systems, the lie can be exposed. With the lies exposed, we can see the truth. And what does the truth do for us? According to Scripture, the truth shall set you free. Notice that freedom results from truth, not socialism, not sacrifice of the individual for the good of society, not taxation and regulation, not global government. Truth is synonymous with freedom. Since communications technology makes it more difficult to lie successfully, it opens the door to truth, to freedom. The CIA, possibly one of the most deceptive agencies in the world, proudly displays this biblical quote, "And ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall set you free," over the entrance to its headquarters in Langley, Virginia. Even in the midst of a lie, the truth is recognized as supreme. So, what is the truth about tyranny, wealth, and individual freedom? The truth, my friends, is that we have been told many lies. Many of these lies relate to wealth. Wealth, we are told, results from the rich exploiting the poor. Wealth, we are told, must be redistributed via government as an act of compassion. Our selfish human greed for wealth, we are told, is the reason that war will always be with us. We must give up our freedoms, we are told, so that governments can make things right. For the good of society, the individual can and should be sacrificed. Let's examine these statements carefully, starting with the understanding of the nature of wealth. We are told that wealth is limited, so that the only way everyone can have some is to redistribute it. Is this a lie, or is this a truth? Well, we usually equate money with wealth, but they are really very different things. Food, water, shelter, medicine, and other goods and services are true wealth, Money is worthless if we're stranded on a desert island with no goods or services to purchase. Even the wealthiest of ancients did not have many things we take for granted. A greater number of people than ever before enjoy a lifestyle that our ancestors could not even imagine. Medical advances, better modes of transportation, the ability to talk to anyone, anywhere in the world. Our wealth has increased greatly. Where did we get all this wealth? The earth certainly did not get a renewed endowment of resources between ancient times and the present. Instead, we discovered new ways to use existing resources. Better uses for existing resources and the replication of these ideas is the real source of wealth. Natural resources are like seeds that grow into wealth when they are nurtured and developed by individuals acting alone or in concert. The amount of wealth a country produces does not depend primarily on its endowment of resource seeds. Japan has almost no mineral wealth, while Mexico has great abundance. And yet, of course, the Japanese are much more affluent than the Mexicans. Similarly, North Korea is poorer than South Korea, even though they share a similar resource base and culture. East Germany created much less wealth than West Germany before reunification in 1990. Obviously, resource endowments are not the primary factor that determines creation of wealth. Resources, indeed, do not impose any practical limitations on the creation of wealth. For example, even if our fossil fuels should be foolishly depleted, energy is abundantly available in each and every atom if we only knew, as we one day will, how to tap it safely. Human resources are how-to ideas, and replication of these ideas determine how much available wealth there is at any one time. Since human creativity appears unbounded, the amount of wealth possible is virtually limitless. Wealth is not limited. That was a lie. The truth is that wealth is limitless. The truth frees us from the redistribution struggle. Instead of fighting over how existing wealth should be distributed, why not simply create enough to go around? Indeed, that's how the United States became the wealthiest country in the world. In the 1800s, European countries restricted wealth creation. They required most people to belong to guilds to practice a profession. If you didn't have family connection or money to buy them, you couldn't always legally create wealth. Immigrants to the United States didn't face many of these restrictions back in the 1800s. They came to the U.S. and could begin wealth creation immediately. Since the poor immigrants outnumbered the established, well-to-do residents, allowing the poor to work resulted in a great increase in the wealth of the United States. Because the United States poor were allowed to work, they were wealthier than the poor of other nations. The distribution of wealth was therefore more even. Indeed, studies show that countries with the most wealth creation predictably have a more even distribution of wealth compared to countries with less wealth creation. The reason for this is simple. A country's wealth doesn't increase very much if a few rich people get richer. However, when the many not so rich are allowed to work, the sum total of wealth created is very large. Rich countries get that way by letting their poor work. The United States is currently experiencing much less wealth creation because it no longer lets its poor create wealth. In New York City, for example, would-be taxi drivers must purchase a medallion or license, currently costing over $100,000, before they can legally carry customers. Because of these restrictions, Most of the licensed taxi drivers can make a good living servicing only the better parts of the city. Consequently, when ghetto dwellers that are too poor to afford a car need to go to a doctor, there is no legal taxi service available for them. Consequently, some of the poorer residents that were able to afford a vehicle started giving taxi service to their neighbors illegally. By 1979, these gypsy operatives were more numerous than the legal medallion holders. Now, as long as they stayed in the ghetto areas, the police didn't bother them. However, when the gypsy cabs came into the better areas of the city, the medallion holders insisted that the government enforcement agencies stop them, at gunpoint if necessary, from servicing willing customers. We can learn several important lessons from the New York experience. First, the truth is that the poor can create wealth for themselves, if we let them. The lie we have been told is that the poor are incapable of helping themselves. Secondly, government regulations make it illegal for many people to create wealth. The lie we have been told is that government is necessary to help the poor. The truth is that government restrictions on wealth creation cause most of the poverty in the world today. People who seemingly benefited from these government restrictions were those who had enough resources to pay for the medallion. The rich got richer and the poor got poorer thanks to government regulation. The lie is that government is a friend of the poor. The truth is that it is a tool of the more well-to-do special interests. Look at any country where wealth creation is slow, and you'll find massive government restrictions that prevent the poor from creating wealth. Look in your own countries and find the truth for yourself. Share this truth and help your nation become wealthy. The truth about wealth creation sets us free, free from mind-numbing, spirit-destroying poverty. When the people of each nation realize the truth, that government restrictions keep them from creating wealth, these restrictions will be unenforceable. Why unenforceable? Simply because the government has created so many poor people that it will be unable to control them. The Frankenstein monster, so unnaturally created, will bring down its creator. Poetic justice, eh? And perhaps poetic justice is the key here. Poetic justice means reaping as we have sown. The truth is that the means we use dictate the ends we get. So, of course, we must reap as we sow. The lie is that the ends can justify the means, that a good harvest can come from bad seed. You probably wouldn't dream of going next door to your neighbor with gun in hand to demand money, even to help some of the less fortunate. Certainly, you wouldn't go to the expense of hiring a gunslinger to do your dirty work for you. It's much simpler, easier, and less costly to help the less fortunate yourself. You'll also sleep better at night, knowing that your neighbor has no reason to stick a gun in your face. Somehow, though, we think that such despicable means can result in social good as long as the government is the gunslinger. The lie is that the end justifies the means. The lie is that a good harvest can come from bad seed. The lie is that if we sacrifice individual property rights, government will protect the environment. In most countries, however, the truth is that government is the greatest polluter, and giving up our rights only encourages them. The bad seed gives us a fearsome harvest. The lie is that government can efficiently provide us with services we need, like delivering the mail on time or educating our children. The truth is that these services cost us twice as much as they would if delivered by the private sector. Britain and New Zealand are two of the countries that have glimpsed the truth and are setting an example by privatizing in many areas. In this age of instant and comprehensive communication, the lies are becoming more difficult to conceal. You might wonder why anyone believes the lies anymore. Well, supporters of government taxation and regulation believe the greatest lie of all. They believe that they can profit from government's exploitation of the poor, the environment, and society in general. For instance, in our taxicab example, the medallion holders might have thought that regulation served them. Sure, they had to pay extra for the medallion, because there were fewer cab drivers, they could charge a lot more and work in the better parts of the city. On the surface, at least, it may have appeared to them that they had profited from government's exploitation of the would-be cab drivers too poor to afford the medallion. When you tell your countries the truth about wealth creation, these special interest groups will oppose you. They believe they can profit by using the guns of government against their competition. They'll plead for regulations, subsidies, and tariffs that seemingly help them at the expense of others. How can you expose the lie? Well, remember that every time we inhibit the creation of wealth, we make our country poorer. Fewer goods and services are available to buy. If taxis are regulated, other industries will be too. Every dollar, every mark, every ruble buys less than it otherwise would. The medallion holder may have a few more dollars or rubles, but these dollars or rubles will buy less. That's just the beginning, though. The enforcement of the regulation takes money, tax money. The taxes paid by the medallion holder go up. That's not all. The would-be taxi drivers who are out of work clamor for support. Welfare takes money, tax money. The taxes paid by the medallion holder go up. That's still not all. The tax collectors and social workers for these programs must be paid with, you guessed it, tax dollars. These taxes paid by the medallion holder go up. Finally, some of the medallion holders, crippled by high taxes and lower purchasing power, can't make ends meet. They go on welfare, and costs for the tax collectors, social workers, and welfare climb once again. And the taxes paid by the working medallion holders, again, go up. The truth is, it's virtually impossible to really profit by using government against your neighbor. We reap as we sow, just as surely as if we personally went to our next-door neighbor and used a gun to take their money. But that's still not all. We use government in an attempt to better ourselves because we think that the power and money we hope to gain will make us happy. Once again, the means we use is reflected in the ends we actually get. I once talked to a man who made his living by constructing and propagating lies about wealth to help the special interests he supported. His stature was great enough to land him on the cover of Time magazine. I could see that this man was not very happy. So I asked him one day what his goals were, and he said without hesitation, power and money. But because he already had those two things, I realized I had misstated my question and asked once again, what do you think it would take to make you happy? And he answered, I don't feel like I'm part of the human race. I don't feel I belong, but I'd like to. And that's what I think I need to make me happy. This man awakened me to a great truth. When we use coercion, hoping to bring ourselves happiness, we must separate ourselves from the person we intend to harm. We don't love them as ourselves anymore. Truth is, it's difficult to feel happy when we've created separation between ourselves and others. We can wish it otherwise, but the truth is that we need a connection for our fellows. It's part of being human. The lie is that we can do unto others and not, at the same time, do unto ourselves. The truth sets us free. Free from the compulsion to see our neighbor as someone separate from ourselves, someone we can exploit or control. This freedom, sets the stage for connectedness that is a prerequisite to our own happiness. That is the truth which will heal our world. That is why coercion will inevitably not be part of our world. For consider, if people could gain happiness through coercion, their own self-interest would drive them to enslave others. If the enslaved ever became free, it would only to attempt to be masters themselves. The world would be condemned to everlasting war. On the other hand, if coercion is ultimately self-defeating, if it costs us the very goal we seek, then all that stands between a world of peace and a world at war is the truth. In today's age of rapid communication, knowing the truth is easier than ever before. The truth will set us free. Free from poverty, free from coercion, free from war, free from separation. Help your nation find the truth about physical wealth and open them to the possibility of even greater riches, the happiness and fulfillment which we all seek in every thought, every word, and every deed. Take the truth home to your nation and help to really set it free. Thank you. If you have questions, I'd be happy to entertain them at this time.
Yeah, please line up with the mic, folks. And please give your name and country of origin until we know who the hell you are, right?
I'm David Anderson from Calgary, Alberta. Dr. Ruud, I'm wondering, people have been mentioning, you know, the vision of the libertarian future. I am wondering if you could give some notion, maybe in terms of a numerical multiplier, how much richer we would be in a libertarian world without taxation, without regulation. Could you give us some ballpark estimate?
Yes. In my book, Healing Our World, I give a conservative estimate of 8 times as much wealth. To me, this is somewhat like the difference between the Dark Ages and the computer age. So it's almost difficult to imagine the greatness and the wealth that we would have without those taxes and regulations. And again, I emphasize it's probably a conservative estimate.
Thank you.
Reg Jacklin, Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Excellent speech, Mary. I really enjoyed it. I got from your speech you were getting at we need to enlist the people who are creating the medallions, as you put it, to our cause. I also heard you use the word lies a lot. And I hear a bit of a contradiction there. So I'm just wondering, do you have any suggestions on what we could do to enlist people without scaring them away? You know, those very people you were talking about.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess my message is that liberty is a win-win situation and that coercion is a lose-lose proposition. And by appealing to each individual's best self-interest, we are most likely to persuade them. Obviously, for each individual situation, you might use a little different words, but the example I gave is rather universal. When we use coercion, we think there's no costs, but there actually are. And you can point them out in a step-by-step fashion as I did, and I go through that in Healing Our World also in a little bit more detail. Not everyone is going to immediately jump up and say, oh, I get it. There's some resistance because, of course, we always hate to think that we've been wrong at some point in our life.
Yeah.
And so what I would suggest if you're using this technique with the people you're talking to is remember to be very compassionate. There may have been times in your life when you held a belief that you no longer hold, that now you would call a lie instead of truth. And so you certainly want to be as little judgmental as you can in approaching people. That's something I think that in the past we haven't been so good at. Remember that there are people struggling for their best self-interest just like we are. They just haven't seen the perspective and the angle we have. And it's so wonderful because you can go to them and say, hey, I'm selling you liberty. not necessarily because it's great for me, although it is, but it's great for you too. It's your own best self-interest. That's the most powerful argument there is.
Yeah, I guess my point really is if you come up and start by saying you're a liar, you're going to cut off.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yes, yes. Well, of course, I would not go up and say to somebody that you're a liar. What you might want to say, though, is that the belief they have is not consistent with their own best self-interest.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. My name is Chief Eliazu. I'm from Nigeria. I have problem with some of the positions, but let me start with this. You did say that wealth is not limited. Are you suggesting that scarcity is an illusion?
Ah, well, scarcity is created by our ignorance, I guess is how I would say it. What I'm suggesting is that any country, regardless of how poor they are today, if they were to embrace liberty, they would find that they had a very great rate of wealth creation and that there really isn't any limit to how far that they can go. The resources will not limit them. The only thing that is a practical limitation is how hard people in their country wish to work and how creative that they are. And when I say it's limitless, I mean that since the human being's ability to create is not limited, that in real terms, we don't have a limitation that is set on us by nature. The limitation is set by ourselves. The scarcity comes from our beliefs and our position, not from the environment.
Oh, you're saying that natural resources are inexhaustible? Is that what we're talking about?
I'm saying the way we can use our natural resources is, if you will, inexhaustible. In other words, we can get creative in how we use them, so we don't need to use very many. In the ultimate extreme, if we were so foolish, and it would be foolish, to exhaust our planet of all of our natural resources, we still are not at the end of the line, because if we create enough wealth, if we have enough ideas about how to get to other planets, for example, we could actually use resources there. I'm not suggesting we do that. I'm just pointing out that there's always more that we can go to. Resources themselves are not the limitation.
Okay, let me take you back to another area. Mm-hmm. You said wealth must be redistributed, right?
No, I said that was the lie.
It's an assertion. How can that be distributed? How?
How can it be redistributed?
Yeah.
Okay, what I was saying is that the belief, the lie, is that we should redistribute wealth. And what I'm saying is if we simply allow our poor to work, there's no reason to redistribute it because they can create wealth of their own. In other words, rather than spending all our time trying to take from the rich and give to the poor, we should make the poor wealthy or allow them that chance.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
My name is Larry Dodge. I'm from Montana. I've been enjoying your talk, and one of the things you said inspired me to remember something that occurred when I was attending the Libertarian Party National Convention in New York, and that was your remarks about unenforceability. I don't know if I want to recite the whole incident, but I do want to say this. It seems like you're saying at some point there are so many laws that they're unenforceable, and there seems to be some respite for individual liberty therein. And if, maybe I'm putting words in your mouth, and I don't want to do that, but this is a thought I've often had. At some point, there are so many laws that they cannot be enforced physically. There's just too many laws to enforce. So the best we get is selective enforcement of this one or that one. And some of the freest places I've ever been are places that are just loaded with laws and regulations, and there just isn't enough personnel or person power to enforce them all. I'd like your thoughts on that.
Okay. Well, that's certainly a perspective. I guess what I meant is that a big part of current enforcement is that people believe in government. They believe it's a good law. They believe it should be obeyed. They believe that if people took the law into their own hands, for example, that there'd be chaos. And so because there's a belief that the system is somehow good or working or necessary, people go along. Once people recognize that, in fact, the opposite is true, that the idea that government is there to help the poor is a fallacy, that it's a tool of the special interests, then people are no longer so eager to go along. Then they're much more willing to go and do what they want to do. And I think maybe Peru is a good example of this. They have a lot of land restrictions on ownership of property. It takes a long time to get the deed. And so people are just going out, and they're homesteading places. And part of what you said, there's just not enough enforcement because